Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle.
This is Radio City Talk.
Okay, it's time for Mental Health Monday. I do hope you're well. My name is Mick Coyle. We do Mental Health Monday today after the August bank holiday, so it's a Tuesday today. So it's Tuesday, but it's Mental Health Monday. The podcast will be available today, Tuesday, but it will still say Mental Health Monday just because that name seems to work a little bit better than Mental Health Tuesday. Thank you for tuning in today. There's lots to get through on this particular program and a date for the diaries that you might want to get involved in as well. We'll talk about some amazing work done by a local charity, and podcast listeners can also listen to our interview session with the laughter yoga specialist. This is someone working in mindfulness and positive mental health through the use of laughter. Stick around for that. If you're listening to the podcast, we'll get that on the podcast. You can check it out via radiocitytalk.co.uk. Just click on the Mental Health Monday link. We've got special guests in the studio today who are going to be talking about their son Nathan. They're also raising awareness of a key issue, the issue of young people and suicide, through the charity Papyrus, and there is a 10k run taking place on the 17th of September. We'll get all the information once we've heard their story. We've got Len and we've got Gail Wilson in the studio. Guys, thank you for your time. Really appreciate you joining us on Mental Health Monday, and thank you for the opportunity for you guys to come on and share that story, because you lost your son Nathan. Len, can you tell me about him?
Yes, we lost Nathan roughly 4.5 years ago, the 27th of February, say 4 years ago. He was 17 and a half. We knew he had issues, as his brother did, but we knew Nathan was affected by bullying. We didn't really realise how badly he was affected by bullying until that happened. We became involved with Papyrus earlier this year, who've been a great comfort to us. And as you've stated, we are here to raise awareness of the problem of young suicide and to raise awareness of Papyrus. They are there to help young people, and they're doing a fine job. Unfortunately, they've grown in the last 9 years, because they've had to grow, because the situation of young suicide is becoming more prevalent day by day.
In losing your son, did you then become aware just how prevalent an issue it is? Once you open the Pandora's box and start looking into this situation, you see it's an all too common one.
Absolutely, because we become more aware then. Your attention is drawn to the newspapers more. You pick up on suicides more. You begin to research it more even. And it does become more prevalent to yourself that it's out there, and it's a situation that needs to be addressed and needs to be discussed by people, not just people like ourselves, like you are doing today. The media need to discuss it more, to raise awareness of the issue and to lift the stigma of suicide, take away the taboo. It seems to be a taboo subject, like cancer was. One time I remember being a teenager and people used to whisper, "He's got the big C," or "She's got the big C." You couldn't say the word cancer, even. It was almost a taboo subject. Now people openly talk about cancer quite freely, about any members of family or friends who've had cancer. But suicide is still a taboo subject, and that needs to be lifted.
In terms of Nathan, can I ask you about his computer? You found like an essay or a piece which had been written on his laptop, which was, I know you talked to him in the past about whether or not you thought that was his way of trying to get the thoughts that were in his head down onto a piece of paper, but you subsequently only found it after his death.
His death, yeah. It was called Basically Bored, and he created this roughly 7 to 8 months before he took his own life. And it goes briefly into how he became ostracised and basically bullied. Basically bored. He was basically bullied while he was in school. We knew he had been bullied. We didn't realise to what extent. When we used to say about doing things outside the house with both boys, we used to discuss with them. Maybe volunteer work, because they were in the house 7/24. He used to say, "I don't like people out there." And we knew that was the effect of bullying. And it does cover briefly in this one-page file what he went through, principally at school, because he didn't have any social life from the age of 13 or 14 outside the home. He erased everything from his laptop except this one file, and it's virtually a suicide note. It doesn't say what he's going to do, but it tells us and everyone else who reads it why he took his own life.
And to complicate the picture, or simplify the picture for some, there was a diagnosis of his twin brother after Nathan's death, which might have explained some of the issues that he may have been facing or how he was dealing with the situations. Yes. Is that fair?
Yes, that is correct. I mean, just before, we had problems with both boys with regards to leaving school. They left school around about 15 years of age. And we had professionals come on board eventually, and they said that one of our sons possibly had Asperger. We didn't know what that meant. We had no idea. We just thought it was a socialising problem. And that's something that we could get over in time. Unfortunately, that wasn't the case, and we didn't get the help that was required, and we didn't get the diagnosis that was required, that would have helped the situation for both boys and to understand each other, because they were so different, and the differences made them disagreeable with each other, and that caused a lot of rift. If they even had the diagnosis, that could have help themselves to understand a little more about themselves and each other, and unfortunately that didn't come about for us.
And help us understand them more.
Yes.
If we'd have been aware about Asperger, what as he was and how serious it can be.
Yes.
I mean, with Asperger sufferers of that age, attempted suicides of boys, particularly males of around that age, 17, is quite prevalent as well. Of Asperger sufferers.
Did you find yourself, Gail, sort of trying to work out the reasons, if you like the systematic reasons, the institutions, you know, the what did he come up against medically? What were things like in school? Were you trying to find those reasons? Well,
yes, we were trying to find answers from school. Initially, all the school wanted was a tick box and get them back into school. They didn't really go into what was wrong, what's your problems, boys, you know, why. There was no really talking to them. Then the welfare system came on board. Again, there was no talking to them, and they just wanted them to get back into school no matter what. We were told we had to go to court. Nathan was sent to court. Our other boy, he ended up going under CAMHS. That led to a road to nowhere. We were stuck, and we had nowhere to go. We had nowhere to turn to. We did try to turn to professionals. We had a crisis meeting. Nothing happened. We were given no information, and we didn't know what to do.
We were abandoned at the time by professionals.
Yeah, and unfortunately, that led to the death of our son Nathan. And if help had been there, if there's more understanding of the children, if there'd been more help for people to defend them and talk to them, maybe, and I think it would have been prevented.
Do you think that's one of the key frustrations, that as parents, you're parents and you're doing your best and you're trying to do your best based on what you see and what's in front of you? It's your children, of course, you know them, you care for them. Yeah. And when it feels like the system's letting you down, you're coming up against brick walls. You say, you know, you use the phrase, you know, we were abandoned by the professionals.
Yeah.
They're supposed to be the ones that when you turn to them and say, help us out.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's become more apparent when you look into things afterwards, particularly, and I'm going to state it as it is, with CAMHS. Just someone we've got to know in the last couple of years with a committee that we're involved with in Rimrose Valley. A gentleman, his son has Asperger. Now, he said he was diagnosed younger, but when he got to the age of 16 to 18, there was virtually no help. Where our sons, particularly one of them, it was suggested he had him, and then if one has it, Curtis, we know Nathan had it as well. But it was a late diagnosis anyway. It was only as we approaching the age of 16 that was mentioned. Then we were coming into that period where there's virtually no help and there should be help.
And everyone has their own experience with CAMHS, and we've heard many different stories about how people have either got on board or not gone on board, or the pathways to it as well, which are different and difficult in every single situation. We've got Len and Gail Wilson with us in the studio. They lost their son, Nathan, to suicide. They're raising awareness about that issue now, and they're also organising a 10 5K run in his name, taking place on September the 17th. We'll get all the details about that as well, so people can sign up and get on board. That raising the awareness now, do you feel, Gail, like this is something that you need to do because of what you experienced, because of what you went through, and because you felt like you were almost fighting in the dark with it?
Yes.
By talking about it, it might just trigger with somebody else. Oh, there's somebody who has experienced what I experienced. I might be able to get some help, some advice
yes,
from them.
Yes, that's what we're hoping. We're hoping in time. I think with there's a lot of mental health issues, and we're not the only ones, and we know there's a lot of people fighting out there for all the children. There's not enough in place for our children to go to. There's not enough in place for people to go and talk. There's not enough in place for our children to go and talk to, someone to befriend them, someone to talk to. There needs to be more awareness. There needs to be more money put into these things for our children. There's a lot of children out there that find that hitting head against the wall, and they have nowhere to go to. And unfortunately, a lot of the children don't go to the parents. They need someone else to talk to, and it needs to be easily accessible, not have to look through the website to find out where, you know, not have to go out of the town to find out where. It needs to be there and accessible.
And do you think as well, you know, that there's one issue for young people, but also an issue for the parents as well? Because obviously you were sort of trying to look out for both of your boys, trying to do all the right things as well, but aware that they operate young teenage boys, you know, people operate on different levels, don't they? So do you think that maybe there should be a point of contact for the parents as well as the young people?
Absolutely. And this is another thing that we have found of recent, that when you have a child, especially ours being diagnosed as Asperger, the specialists don't look at you as your parent. They look at the child and they have to be the sort of adult, and we are not inclusive in that. And unfortunately, sometimes that's when the children don't get the help that they require, because these children are too shy to ask for help, and they'll just go along with what's been said and tick box as they go along, but actually the issues are not being dealt with.
It's the age of when you reach the age of 18,
yes.
Parents then are excluded because it's the ethics and confidentiality. Mm-hmm. But if you've got a young man or a young woman, it's like having a child then, that, you know, they've got issues and it's difficult for them to deal with, and the parents are excluded, which I think something needs to be done on that, these ethics. If the help isn't there enough, then parents should be able to talk to professional people about that child. They are still...
Based on the idea that even though they've crossed an age threshold, there's a vulnerability threshold, which is still very much there.
Yeah,
no, I think people will absolutely absolutely take that point. Was there anything that you've subsequently heard about, or anything where you thought, that would have made a difference? Maybe things in other parts of the country, maybe. Was there a, I think people call it best practice now. You know, was there something which you'd have thought, well, if that had been in place, if I could have turned to that, it would have given you another option when you felt that other professions had closed the door in your face?
That's a difficult one to reply to, because we don't see anything really out there at this moment in time for young people of a certain age, beyond 16. Maybe there is, but at this moment in time, we don't see that there is enough out there.
And also, you pointed in a direction from when we asked for help through the school, through the welfare, and it goes on and on. There is no information out there that you can click on to and say, oh, I need to go to that person, I need to go to that person, or that professional. You just go with what's been put in front of you, really.
And I think one of the things you talked about, you know, the taboos and talking about it within school or education environments, do you think that that's where a lot more work could be done, so there's a point of contact there?
Absolutely. We think there should be. The schools do have mentors, but we think with the best intentions, these mentors are not trained enough. They should be. We think every. I know America don't get everything right, but in America, high schools have psychologists, and that's what we believe that our schools should have, where it's part of the curriculum, that every teenager goes and speaks with this. So no one's singled out. Each of them speaks with the psychologist. And then if there are any issues, then they can be identified and dealt with in a discreet manner. I think that is something that this country should strive to achieve, because at the moment, young people's issues are not being addressed in school, and that's where it starts in school, and that's where it should be identified and dealt with.
we're going to talk all about the awareness that you're raising about this, and I think you're doing a fantastic job in the way you're telling your story and sharing your story. And I'm sure people who this has affected will absolutely, you know, many of these different issues will trigger as well. In some ways, it's a unique story because of the issues that were surrounding Nathan. But in some ways, there are so many issues which are catch-all that will hit home with many different people, if it's the Asperger's or not. Obviously, the suicide, the fact that 17-year-old boy, teenage boys as well, obviously had a twin, and the subsequent diagnosis of him as well. The 10K run, we'll give all the details about this as well, and it's in Nathan's name as well. We'll give all the details next. We've got Len and Gail Wilson with us in the studio here on Mental Health Monday, and this is Radio City Talk.
Radio City Talks, Mental Health Monday, with Mick Coyle.
Yeah, we've got a couple of guests in the studio today talking about their son, Nathan. It's Len and Gail Wilson. The run, the 10K run in the name of Nathan Wilson, is taking place on September the 17th. Guys, you're organising this event, Len and Gail Wilson, and you were organising it to get people involved. There's a 10K run, but also you're doing a 5K option.
It's correct.
Yeah. As well. Yeah, yeah. That's because sometimes people think 10K, all right, I'd like to support you, but that's a little bit too far.
Yeah, yeah, double the amount. And a lot of people are interested in doing the 5K. It's on the 17th of September in Rimrose Valley Country Park.
Walk as well.
You can walk if you wish. It's run or walk. But we need the numbers up there. They're slowly coming in now, so for all you runners, joggers and walkers out there, get on board with this. It's £10 to enter, but you can be sponsored. A few friends or family, a couple of pounds each, and you've covered your entrance fee. It's in a good cause. It's to raise awareness of the problem that's out there of young suicide, and the funds will go to Papyrus, who are there for the prevention of young suicide. They're a very worthy charity. They've been going for 20 years, and as I've said, they've had to grow in the last 9 years because this has become so prevalent, the problem of young suicide.
Just tell us about why you thought now's the right time. Why is now the right time? Where you contacted Papyrus just this year and said, we want to do something. Was there something in the back of your mind thinking?
I was never aware, or we weren't aware, that Papyrus existed until a lady named Sarah, I've forgotten her surname, but she was on Granada Report earlier on this year, in I think it was early February, and I'd never heard of Papyrus till then, so I Googled them, because that's something I've learned to do recently, is Google and email. So I Googled them, and then I contacted them, and we arranged, they were having a meeting, I think it's their general meeting, it was on the 1st of April in Warrington, in Warrington Town Hall. And we went there and we met some lovely people, most of which, there's about 50 people there, most who were involved with Papyrus have gone through what we've gone through, even their trustees and what have you. And then we became involved with them, and they've been a great comfort to us, and we feel as though being involved with them now, there's a purpose in our lives. I feel like to raise awareness of the problem that's out there and raise awareness of Papyrus. And Papyrus are there to help young people. Young people should know that there is someone there to help. Whether you have a friend or a relative, a young person who has a problem, you could contact Papyrus or ask the person to contact Papyrus. They are there to help.
What is it for you, Gail, that, you know, and people listening to this would absolutely understand if, you know, you guys wanted to turn in on yourself and, you know, on your family and, you know, concentrate on that, but instead you reached out to that group, or that group reached out to you as well, and you found something within it. What was it within there, do you think, that that benefits you and obviously you sharing your stories through them?
It was the fact that we could actually talk about our son. We couldn't talk about him before. It's very difficult talking about suicide of your child to anybody. It is a taboo subject, and all the will in the world, people shy away. And I do understand, and I must admit, I get upset myself. So, but with Papyrus, because there were people there so lovely, and they talk and they understand, and you could just feel like, it's just such a relief.
It's a shared empathy, yeah, with the people in Papyrus.
Yeah.
And
but also people that understand.
Yeah, they understand what you're going through. Yes. And they're there to reach out to people who, before it gets to the stage,
yes,
that we've gone through, they're there to reach out to people to prevent young suicide. That's their ultimate aim. And as a fundraiser, who I recently met, she'd become their chief fundraiser. And I was saying, well, really, their business is get to the point where they're no longer needed. And she said, which is a good quote, yeah, really, their aim was to put themselves out of business. And you couldn't put it better. That's what their aim is, to put themselves out of business severely. Because they believe that virtually all suicides are preventable. There's always some that will slip through the net, even if you've got everything perfectly in place. But they believe, and we do thoroughly believe, that virtually all suicides are preventable.
And the experience that you have of talking about and breaking down those taboos, or a subject which isn't taboo within that particular environment, does that give heart to you in regard to maybe how society is changing its opinion on mental health, that mental health is starting to find its way out of the shadow, that actually if we do talk about it, you guys have seen there is a real benefit to that?
Yes, I do. I totally do agree with
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
Talking is everything. People find it very difficult to talk because people going through any kind of problems find it difficult to talk because they feel that people don't want to listen to them. But if they just put it out there, there's always someone who will listen. And that's what I think we've just got to get over. We've just got to reach out. And for you to reach out and talk, and for other people to reach out and listen. And that makes a big, big difference.
Has this inspired you to kind of think even bigger about this? You're doing the run now, you're looking to raise money, the work you're doing with Papyrus as well. Has that got your brain ticking over about what more you could do? Or is there more that could be done?
Yeah, well, I'm hoping. I mean, I'm a total novice at this sort of thing, but I'm hoping to get a sort of satellite branch of Papyrus set up in Sefton. And we've already been offered to share a community centre. Just from the story being in the Echo, I was contacted by email, which is absolutely marvellous. These people contacted us and said we could share community centre, or a room in the community centre in Lineker Lane, but it's the Venus Centre, and it used to be the old library that's been reopened, and they showed us this lovely room, didn't we?
Beautiful.
We went to see them.
Yes.
It has a certain ambience about it, and you think it's the perfect place to, if we could talk to young people somewhere to get up if they have problems. I am not qualified in this. We'll need some
that's
kind of training
to
do
it,
We're already speaking. At the moment, and I think the fundraiser will be speaking to him now, our local councillor, and said there are funds for this, so people could be trained in the art, if you will, to talk to young people, and it does require funding, and hopefully that is another stage where we can prevent suicides locally.
And that will be essentially a support centre, an area where mums and dads could take their kids if they wanted to, or children could go independently.
Parents can drop in, young people can drop in, but that was mentioned, that even parents to come in and talk. It's early stages, the funding has to be come up with, but it is being looked into as we speak, and hopefully that will get off the ground.
And that ambition, actually, and you know, and we have many examples of this, and I speak to many people all the time who find themselves, I use the word trailblazing, they're dealing with an issue themselves and they find they didn't know where to turn, or where they turned wasn't the right place. So instead they create an environment whereby the next group of people coming through find themselves having someone to turn to. And that strikes me as exactly what you're doing. You went through your experience, that you've gone through it, and you've thought, we didn't know what we were doing, or we didn't have somewhere to turn, or we felt that we were being let down. So let's offer the thing that we felt we needed, on the off chance that the next family that come along might get that opportunity. I think that's incredibly brave that you're putting that out there, and you're doing that on behalf of other families who might find themselves in the exact same situation that you find yourself in.
Well, I personally don't feel brave. I just feel as though it's something we have to do. I don't feel brave at all. I just, something that we really desire to do, to help other people. Not to go through what we've gone through. And if this, hopefully it will take off, this, but then I might be totally involved in running it if it takes off, more experienced people than me, but hopefully that will, it would be a chain reaction, as you say, it will help one family and then it will create a chain reaction that will help more families and prevent more suicides.
And it's one of those things, isn't it, where if you had an example there, you set up the centre, you know, the Nathan Centre, whatever it will be called, and people go in, then somebody else down the M62 might go, well, can we get a Nathan Centre over here? Further down the M62 might say the same people in Birmingham, London, and then these things. And then suddenly it becomes a, here's an example about how you can make a difference to young people. Yeah. And here are the sorts of people that, that can be. I think it's absolutely wonderful that the work you're doing now. And we wish you all the best. If there's any support we can offer you along that journey as well, if we can make that happen. If you've had the offer of the community space, that's a really good starting point. But there's funding and everything in between. We wish you all the very best for that. In the meantime, people can support Papyrus as well through the run. It's a 10K or a 5K, and you can walk. And it's happening at Rimrose Valley, and it's the 17th.
Google.
I was going to say, if you want to, there's a Gail Wilson Papyrus link on Just Giving as well. What we'll do when we put this up on our social media, we'll get all the links up there too. There's numbers to call and so on and so forth.
That's fine.
We wish you all the best with it. Len and Gail, thank you for your time. Thank you for sharing your stories as well.
You're welcome.
We wish you all the best as well with the centre, because I think that sounds like, in its very early stage, something that might make a real difference. And thank you for sharing your story. Thanks for joining us on Mental Health Monday.
Yes, very well.
Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle.
This is Radio City Talk.
Okay, so it's Mental Health Monday. My name's Mick Coyle. I do hope you're well. We've got a guest in the studio now who's going to make us laugh. But he's not a comedian. Or maybe he is, actually. Jordan Fawcett joins in the programme. Jordan, thank you for your time.
Definitely not a comedian. Thanks for having me.
Brilliant to get you on. You are part of a new sensation, which is sweeping through the world of... mindfulness is a word that we talk about on the programme quite a bit as well. But in terms of therapy sessions, this is something that's a little bit different. So I wanted to explore it on this programme to get a sense of what it's about, whether or not it might be useful to people. Your expertise, well, you explain, what's your expertise in?
Okay, laughter yoga. Most people kind of say, what the hell, what's that? It was invented in India in 1995, and to cut a long story short, it's now practiced worldwide. It's not traditional yoga. People hear the word yoga and automatically think of being on a yoga mat, stretching, breathing, being guided through a practice. We don't do any of that at all. The reason it's called laughter yoga is because yoga is very much about focusing on the breath as well as whatever else we're doing. So imagine that we take the breathing exercises out of yoga and bring them into this practice called laughter yoga. Now, the laughter side of things, it was developed as laughter yoga because we don't laugh enough, basically, in this serious day and age. An Indian consultant in 1995 in Mumbai in India was inspired by so many medical investigations and experiments and research that have been done about laughter all over the years, right the way back since the 1800s. Laughter, to cut a long story short, it's really good for our body because it releases endorphins, works our abdominal muscles, gets our happy hormones going. I could talk all day about the benefits of laughter because there's just so many. It's a natural painkiller, natural antidepressant.
And this is why it fits perfectly into this program. So this is essentially as a therapy. This is a way of triggering certain things in the brain which might jolt people out of a particular state of mind. When it was looked at in India, was there a need in Mumbai at the time, or was it almost like a scientific experiment, if you like, to see if you can get enough people laughing at once, whether or not they might feel better?
Not necessarily. As far as I understood and through all my research, is Madan Kataria, who's the GP's name in India, he was a GP anyway. He was a medical doctor, and he was just inspired by laughter, and he found that a lot of his patients who were suffering from mental health issues at the time, there wasn't enough in place for them, and there wasn't enough for them to, not enough options. He looked at all kinds of studies over the years that were done about laughter, one of which, for example, in America in the 1970s, there was an American political activist and a global peacemaker called Norman Cousins. He, in his later life, he became quite ill with a condition called ankylosing spondylitis. It's a type of arthritis which is directly affects the spine. Very excruciating pain for anyone who suffers from it. But all his life he felt strongly about alternative medicine and self-help. He come to the conclusion that the only thing that would give him a good night's sleep was 20 minutes of laughing each night. So he'd watch Candid Camera or do whatever else he had to do to make himself laugh. And he actually baffled doctors because his symptoms have reduced. He felt it worked more than any other medication. There's a quote that says, although laughter might not solve your problems, but it'll certainly dissolve them to allow you to face them in a better mind concept.
Now, when people are looking at sort of their mental health and they're thinking, what could laughter do for me? And I guess this is the leap of faith that people are going to make on this one, Jordan. People will go, the last thing I feel like doing is laughing.
Yeah.
So people might be in a particular situation that might need laughter yoga more than anyone. But actually, the idea of stepping through a door and going standing in a room and laughing or finding something funny is a leap which a lot of people, I guess, would just maybe even discount right from the off and say, what's the point? The laughing is the last thing I want to do. Is that one of the struggles that you come across?
Oh, yeah, every time. And I completely understand, because when I first heard about laughter yoga, I had no idea what it was, looked into it. I actually found it by Googling 2 years back how to tone up my abs, because I was involved in health and fitness and so on. And I was just reading this men's magazine thing on Google, and it said, try a laughter yoga class because laughter is really good for our abdominal muscles. It works our abdominal muscles. And I thought, laughter yoga? I mean, I've done yoga anyway, and I quite enjoy yoga, but I Googled it, and I thought, laughter, and I was very sceptical. I thought, that's something I'm never going to do. But something told me, I thought, I'd like to give it a go, because if it makes you laugh, then, you know, anyone would be wrong to say they don't enjoy laughing. So I went to Manchester to try a class and was still sceptical even at the start. I thought this would be the first and last time. But something told me I had to try it. But that day I seen people on the floor laughing that much that they can't stand up, and people crying, laughing. And I actually thought, actually, this is a really good idea. And I just felt as though it needed to come to Liverpool and more people needed to know about it. So I'd done a course to train to be a leader. The idea of laughing, it comes from childlike playfulness. There's one requirement that people need to do in laughter yoga. You don't have to be fit, you don't have to be flexible, you don't have to be anything else, but there's one requirement. Come out of your inhibitions. We take ourselves too seriously as adults. Children have the ability to laugh without any need, without watching cartoons, without watching. Put a group of children in a room together. 9 times out of 10, they'll just play with each other and laugh. And, you know, it's nice looking at children laughing, and, you know, and we think to ourselves, if only we could laugh like the way children do. So you need to come out of your inhibitions. The laughter is all done through childlike playfulness, deep belly breathing exercises to relax, and childlike playfulness. So we behave out of the ordinary. We behave a bit bizarrely and a bit silly, but it's all the idea of generating contagious laughter, which contagious laughter, it's like a domino effect. We have mirror neurons in the brain that connect with other people as to how they're feeling, and that's what makes laughter contagious. I'll start laughing, someone else will start laughing, and then all of a sudden you'll have a room full of people laughing. Forced laughter's got the very same benefits as what real laughter has.
Yeah, now I'm going to come on to that one, but first and foremost, just in terms of the medical side of this, explain what goes on in the brain when you're laughing that might make people better. What's actually happening? What signals are being triggered? What things are lighting up in people's heads when they start laughing?
The main thing is a huge distraction, basically. Laughter doesn't solve your problems by far. It doesn't change anything, but it gives you that bit of respite just for a short period of time, and it leaves you feeling good for the rest of the day. We release neurotransmitters, which are signals that get sent to the brain. In the brain, we have cortisol levels, which are our natural stress hormones. Laughing, the endorphins that laughter releases promote to them cortisol levels being adjusted to a more suitable level.
Right.
So that's what makes it a natural antidepressant. It does a very similar thing as to what antidepressants do, adjusting the chemical imbalance. Obviously, it doesn't solve depression, it doesn't cure it whatsoever, but it's just that perfect bit of respite, and it promotes to better mental health.
Jordan Fawcett's with us on Mental Health Monday. We're talking about laughter yoga. You're a course leader in this one. Just tell us about how this has maybe been embraced by the medical profession. So this is something which people can sign up to as part of public health now.
Yeah, I've done quite a bit of work lately with one of the local NHS trusts, mental health organisation. I've done a run of a 4-week course, which is coming to the end now of that course. But I always have things going on with laughter yoga. There's always opportunities coming up. I occasionally we'll just hire out rooms and advertise for people to come and enjoy themselves and do a laughter yoga class. I've done quite a bit of work in care homes lately. I've gone into residential and care homes. I've got a career in the NHS as well, so I know full well about mental health for people with dementia and the older population, and I feel quite strongly that there's not enough of it, especially in residential and care homes. Even in some of the best care homes, there just isn't the scope or the funding to have all these wellbeing activities. So I've done quite a bit of work in care homes lately, and it always goes down well with people with dementia, and the carers and families are encouraged to join in. I do sessions with companies as well. It's been quite popular recently with companies. I've been going into companies, to workplaces, to do sessions, because obviously it's a great team bonding exercise. It brings people together and allows better concentration for at work as well, because of the endorphins that it releases, and it's just about not taking ourselves as seriously.
One of the interesting aspects of this one, and you hinted at it before, I wanted to come back to it, because sometimes if people have got mental health issues, they struggle to, because they feel like they're trying to force an emotion, that they feel like they're trying to force a situation. They're trying to smile when they don't feel like smiling. They're trying to act like they're happy when they don't feel happy. But forced laughter, which is pretending to laugh even when you don't find something funny, also tricks the brain into believing that you are laughing and that you do find something funny. This is really interesting, this actually, because this might be very helpful for people because they're so used to that idea of faking a particular emotion just for the sake of getting by the day, that actually faking laughter is as effective as real laughter. It almost seems like you'd think the brain would almost be smart enough to figure that it would be fake. But in this case, and in laughter's case, the laughter triggers the same things, whether you're faking it or not.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
I find it hard to believe myself, but science has proven it. False laughter's got them same benefits to the body and the mind as what real laughter has. Very hard to believe, but it's true.
And I think the other thing is, sometimes if you start laughing in a fake way, what you then start doing is laughing in a real way. It's that thing when people laugh at something because it's not funny, or it's so, when people say, oh, it's so bad, it's good, that they start laughing at it. Well, they think it's bad, but they're laughing at it because there's something in their brain which is saying, you should laugh at this, but it's not very funny. But in laughing at it, it triggers these sort of emotions, and then you get carried away. And then if you're with other friends, they start laughing as well. What you were originally laughing at might not be very funny. Might be a terribly unfunny film,
especially
or something
in,
like
especially
that.
Especially in a room full of people as well. Because if you've got a group of people pretending to laugh, you'll start laughing at someone pretending to laugh and the way they're pretending to laugh. And then all of a sudden you've got a room full of people laughing. In some of my classes that I've done, I've seen people having to sit down because they're laughing. And that's because all the muscles in the body are relaxing. So when we do all these things with the body, like sitting down, laughing, lying down, all the muscles are relaxing. So I've had people that have had to sit down and take a break because they've been laughing that much, they can't control themselves. And it's not a serious practice. That's another thing why people think yoga, you're being guided and it's very serious and it's very, precise. Not in laughter yoga. The idea of it is to start laughing. So if you start laughing, just sit down and start laughing and just watch what's going on. If it turns out that the whole room's laughing and we can't do anything, we all just sit down and laugh. So very unpredictable, the classes, but they always work quite well, and I always get great feedback, and I must do something right.
How long's a session?
A session can be up to an hour, but half an hour, 45 minutes. It depends on the type of place I'm doing a session and the type of people that are doing it and so on. So, there's no hard and fast rules in laughter yoga at all.
I mean, and the fact that you don't have to really laugh, you can force the laughter, is a get-out-of-jail-free card for you, because it means you don't have to, come up with some winning punchlines. Do you always start the show with a few custard pies, a few trips, or like a few gags or anything like that,
nothing
just to trickle
all.
People off?
There's no jokes, there's no comedy whatsoever. We start off with breathing exercises, then we start off with a bit of forced laughter, and then we do a little bit of a warm-up, and then things start to get really bizarre and really silly. And I just say to people, as long as you come out of that shell and break down that brick wall that's in front of you, that's causing you to be serious, then you're laughing.
You're laughing, exactly. John, it's a brilliant idea. I mean, I'm wary now breaking down any inhibitions in the studio, because we're in a slightly enclosed environment here, but I feel like we should do some laughing.
Okay,
Or you could give us a sense of laughing, and maybe see if that triggers me laughing, and then we'll see whether or not we feel better off the back of that, just so that people can get a sense of
just an idea
of what a session might sound like.
Okay.
I think I've been dreading doing this, but this is these are the inhibitions that we're talking
that's
about.
That's it, yeah. Just I feel come like out of that shell and yeah. just, yeah.
Give us a sense then. So you would start laughing?
Okay.
Do you have a fake laugh that you start
a few
with?
Demonstrations, shall we do? Right. Go on. Okay. Obviously, I'm just thinking because on radio, you can't see what I'm doing, so you've got to listen. Okay, we do something. One exercise that we do is called a volume laugh. We'll start off in complete silence and then we'll build up to laughing louder and louder and then quieter and quieter. So after doing some breathing exercises and allowing ourselves to relax and so on, we might do something like this. So we start off in silence, so we're silent. And then we take it up a notch. We take it up another notch. And again. And all the way to the top. And then suddenly back down it.
I laughed then when you stopped.
Yeah, so we do, that's called like the volume laughter exercise. We might do something like that. We might do other things like evil laughter, for example. We'll
like this.
Yeah, we'll walk around the room. We'll make eye contact, because that's when I was talking about the mirror neurons in the mind before, making eye contact with how we're feeling and what we're doing. That's when the mirror neurons connect, and that's what makes laughter contagious. So we'll walk around the room looking at each other, making an evil gesture with our hands, or pretend we're witches mixing cauldrons, looking at each other. Yeah, so it's working in here.
I like that. Yeah. It's the Dr. Evil, isn't it? The
yeah, yeah.
Sorry, you're doing it now.
It is.
So what was going on there? Are we making a connection? Is there a social thing in our brains? Yeah, which you see, there's somebody else laughing. There must be something
we're
funny.
Just allowing ourselves to be playful, to come out of our inhibitions, laughing like the way children do. There's no reason why any children can laugh the way they do. So there's so many different types. So we do posh laughter, laughing like the Queen. Something like that. So many exercises we do. We do all kinds of exercises, all kinds of play. Driving around the room like police cars, making siren noises, neen or neen or neen or all these different type of things. They're completely mad. It sounds mad, I know, but
it's. I think there's something in this, Jordan. I think, and whether or not people are listening to this and just thinking, no, that's not for me, or whether or not they're thinking, oh, there is something in that laughter thing. And I think everyone appreciates that moment where somebody starts laughing, and you're not even really sure what they're laughing at, but you're laughing at the fact that they're laughing. People have experienced that maybe socially, this idea of doing it within a laughter yoga session, and one which would have a real impact on people's mental health, even if it is just a little bit of respite from the problems that people have been facing.
Most definitely.
You're operating around the Liverpool City region at the moment. Where can people find out about the work that you're doing? I've typed laughter yoga online and people can find different sessions right across the country. But if people want to work with you, Jordan, find out a little bit about the sessions that you're hosting, where can they get in contact with you?
They can follow me on Facebook, Laughter Yoga by Jordan. They can follow me on Twitter, at Jordan Laughter. I'm not very social media minded. So and Instagram, Jordan Laughter Yoga. Type in Google Laughter Yoga Liverpool, you'll see videos of me on YouTube and get an idea of what classes are about. So social media, you can contact me by telephone as well.
Brilliant, yeah. What we'll do is, I'm sure the contact details will be out through your social media and your website as well, if people want to get in contact with you as well. Yeah. And I'll grab a number from you at the end and we'll get that on the social media too. John, thank you for your time.
No problem.
It's brought a smile to my face.
Thank you, I'm glad.
So thank you for your time. Thanks for telling us about your laughter yoga sessions.
And thanks for having me. Thank you.
Radio City Talks Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle.